a wild, bonkers start to the NCAA tournament. You got a 16 beating a 1. 2-1 seeds are out. The Cuse is in the Sweet 16. He's here to break it all down. The associate head coach at Cal, my main man, Coach O'Toole. What's up, Timmy? How are you, bro?
JJ, I'm not as good as you, but I'm trying, bro. How about your boys, the Cuse, advancing to the Sweet 16?
It's as good as it gets. And, Coach, it's almost more improbable than the run a couple of years ago because Cuse a 10-point underdog. They're playing a Michigan State team in Detroit, for goodness sakes. They got two NBA players on that team. We know Syracuse is offensively challenged. They couldn't hit an outside shot, but yet the power and the length and the outstanding play at a 2-3 zone, that was your head man, your former boss, Jimmy Boeheim, putting on a clinic to how to coach.
It's really amazing. As the years go by, our dear friend Alex Halter, I kid him all the time, but I mean this sincerely. This is what Coach Bay does, and he makes it look easy. It's regardless of who he has on the roster. Like, one of the stats I just checked up on was at Michigan State, I think their total three-point shooting percentage, volume of offense, 39% of their field goal attempts are from three, right? You play the Cuse, and now all of a sudden, 37 out of your 66 shots, now that thing is up to 57%, are coming from beyond the arc. Teams automatically just change what they're doing. They go out of character. And this is the one thing I've seen over the years. It's really, 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 really hard to outshoot the zone. And what happens is a couple of teams make a few shots, and then everyone gets greedy and it's fool's gold. But here we are on this massive stage, and as you just mentioned, depleted roster, lack of offensive firepower. And yet, what's the score? He keeps this thing in the 50s. Right? And all of a sudden you see Michigan State uncharacteristically spread that baby out, and now you're taking 37 threes that are relatively contested. You make 8, your season ends, and the Cuse marches on. And he does this game in, game out, year in, year out. He's a genius. And that was one of the things, JJ, you know, working for him. He's so mathematically inclined. He knows these percentages. It's all based on probability, and yet it happens year in and year out. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Coach, you know what this defensive game plan reminded me of? And you were on the staff. 2013, Syracuse got hot in the Big East tournament. They win their first two games. Then they play Indiana, who had Victor Oladipo, who had Zella. They were the number one team with Tom Crean. And it looked like that Indiana team had never seen a 2-3 zone before in their lives. And that was the sense I got watching Michigan State. It felt like Michigan State had the edge inside. They're grabbing every rebound. I was very surprised they did not make more of an effort to get the ball down low final 4 or 5 minutes of that game. So when you were on that staff in 2013 and you guys put together that game plan, what about Indiana made you salivate knowing that the 2-3 zone would have such a great effect?
Well, JJ, this is I'm going to give you a little story that happened almost 2 months prior to that, maybe 6 weeks. One of the things, I just got back up to the Cuse, and I was with a bunch of the GAs and the managers, and we were going over scouting, right? I was kind of father time trying to teach them, you know, some of the things to look for when they're scouting if they want to be coaches. So we took the top 20 teams in the country, and Indiana was in the top 4 back then. And we went back, and I showed them some of the key, in my mind, metrics that you gauge on teams that are going to be, you know, they have a shot for the national championship. It's something I've been doing since 1985. Collecting all that data to see, all right, what are some common themes with teams that advance and win the national championship? So field goal percentage defense. Normally, the great teams are going to be almost 10 percentage points higher. So meaning if you're going to shoot 50 from the field, you hold the other teams to 40. Same thing with the three-point line. There's usually like a 10% discrepancy. If you shoot 35, you hold up 25. Or if you shoot 45, there's a 33. There's big gaps, right? And then rebounding dominance and assist to turnover, and they're usually high in that department, like 16 to 12 assist to turnover. So going through Indiana's numbers that year, I'm looking at this with these guys, and this is literally 6 weeks before, you know, it's not like February 1, and I'm like, these are the greatest numbers I've seen, like doing this little statistical homework that I've been doing since 1985, and I'm like, these guys are so, they're dominant running their man-to-man offense. And so as a coach, you obviously knew this is what Coach Crean spends a great deal of time on. That's why they're great. And so when we had a play, I just remember talking to Mike Hopkins before we left, you know, San Jose, and we're heading to eventually D.C. I was like, "Man, check out these numbers." He goes, "You can check all those numbers all you want." He goes, "We're not playing a stitch of man to man. They're going to struggle with us." And just as you mentioned, when you don't see it that often, it's a heck of a lot easier to talk about it. You know, I listen to announcers after announcers, and I think either Alex brought up or Coach Boeheim, you know, get the ball into that middle area. Well, heck, you get, and this is where Mike Hopkins did a great year out of Washington. He allowed people to get it to the middle, but those people are usually forwards. And those forwards are not the guys that are great shooters. They're not the guys that are great decision makers. And that thing closes up like Moses in the Red Sea. I mean, once you get it in there, the fact that everyone's coming, and it's easier said than done to get those shots off, to make passes, because it just, again, it just envelops you. And it's similar. Just as you mentioned, here's Michigan State, loaded at all these different positions, and the Cuse is going on to advance to the Sweet 16.
Coach, now getting ready for the Sweet 16. They play Duke, who beat them by, I think, 16 points earlier in the year. And Coach K has been playing a ton of zone. He's playing the 2-3 zone. His team was having all sorts of issues guarding people. They've been a much better team since they've played the 2-3 zone. Does that hurt Syracuse not only playing an ACC opponent, but a team that knows the zone and is practicing the zone? How much of an edge does that give Duke?
No, so I don't think it does in a sense. I think that Duke might have an edge because Duke has a lot more offensive firepower, at least on the table. The fact that they run a different zone, the rules are different. Like Coach Boeheim is so grounded, and this is what we're doing. When that ball goes past into this area, these are the rules. When that ball is dealt on, into the wing area, this is what we're doing. When it gets into the mid post, the low post, the short corner, there's certain rules that everybody just knows, and you do. Where I think Duke's 2-3 zone is more of a, they put the guys in the spots, they have certain rotations, but they're not like Coach Boeheim's. At least that's the times that I've watched the two. Yes, they do play against, a formation of the 2-3, so they're both going to be relatively comfortable. But I don't, this thing, it's like chess. This is a chess match, right? This is two Bobby Fishes going at it. And now all of a sudden, this is going to be so much fun to watch because, Coach K went to the 2-3, in my opinion, JJ, because, and working for both of these guys, that man-to-man principle, especially the way Coach K has done it, takes a long time. I mean, it takes more than a season. And traditionally, your upperclassmen help pass down the rules. Hey, this is how we do it. This is what we're fighting over this thing. There's a leadership thing that's passed down, especially with Coach K, and man-to-man was part of that. Now, as the one-and-dones have kind of crept into this world, he didn't have those guys that have done this thing over the years, which made their man-to-man so great in years past. And so he's kind of shifted to Coach Boeheim's, philosophy on his own, especially because him and Bay are buddies, best buddies. They're, work together with the Olympic staff. And I'm telling you, Coach K's brilliant too. But one of the things that makes the, playing zone, especially nowadays, it's mathematics, and this is where Coach Bay really excels. Coach K is great at this as well. When you put yourself in a zone, you immediately you're putting yourself in a position to go contest shots. You can play your five guys longer. Look at the stat sheet today. You see a couple of guys in the Cuse playing 40. Right? Everyone's talking about guys get tired and we got to rest players. Those guys are in late March and they're playing 40 minutes. Right? I think it was Battle and picked the next one. You're always in a rebounding triangle. People think, you can't really rebound at it, but over the course of the season, you're doing a pretty good job rebounding because you got guys in the right position. A shooting percentage has dropped because now all of a sudden guys either further out or their legs are more extended. There are so many things that happen in the zone that impact what the offense, offensive players do. And let's face it, a lot of guys can't shoot anymore and they can't pass. And so how you got to beat the zone? You got to get that thing reversed side to side. You got to get it going inside and out. And guys don't have the patience for it. And you saw that a little bit today with Michigan State. They kind of just went side to side and then cranked from deep. And that's usually not a recipe on how to beat that thing. So I do think, getting back to your question, that Duke will have an idea of how to compete against those because they see it every day. But the Cuse is a little bit different. So the rotations, they're not going to be as familiar as they are with their own when playing against them.
Chatting with Tim O'Toole, the associate head coach at Cal. He's worked with Coach K. He's worked under Jimmy Boeheim. He knows a thing or two about playing that 2-3 zone. And, Coach, in your years of being around college basketball, did you ever think that we would see the day where a 16 seed not only beat a number one seed, but blew their doors off?
Again, as a coach, I did think we would see it. You know, when you saw 215 happen a number of times in the past, that was shocking when it happened. But there's so much parity now, and it's it was shocking because this was also the number one team in the country. I mean, the whole thing is shocking. Virginia had been dominant all year long. I mean, just playing outstanding. And then to come into that tournament, it was funny. I was with one of the no longer coaching the ACC, now in the Big Ten, who is in that area. And he just thought that the injury that Virginia suffered to their sixth man was going to really impact them going forward. But I don't think anybody obviously saw, you know, the devastation that happened, you know, in that game against Maryland, Baltimore County. But absolutely shocking. And again, Coach Bennett is as good as anybody in the country, and they just got annihilated.
Coach, then you have Michigan winning in the improbable fashion in which they did. And I always wonder, when you're dealing with these late game situations, you have a lead. Let's say you're up 2 for argument's sake. Do you like the idea of guarding the inbounder, or do you want all 4 or 5 of your guys dropping back, playing defense? Like, when you're drawing up a play, let's say you're up 2, 5 seconds to go, do you want to have one of your guys pressuring the inbound passer?
Yes. I'm a big believer in pressuring the inbound passer. I just remember watching Grant Hill throw the pass to Christian Laettner. That was enough for me to say, you know what? You put a guy in the ball because you don't know if that guy can make a pass. And one of the things you learn in coaching, JJ, is the most important guy on the floor is the guy with the ball in his hand. That's that guy. Can he make a pass? And you'd be surprised how many guys are scared taking the ball. So I do believe in throwing a guy on the ball. However, I'm not a big believer, and I just remember watching Pitt Villanova a number of years back when Scotty Reynolds, you know, you pick up pressure and you give that guard a full head of steam. Now all of a sudden he's got an open court to go downhill. You can get open looks. That's what you want to prevent. So after you might put a guy on the ball, I'm bringing all those other 4 guys back and keeping people in front of you to the best of your ability and taking time off that clock. And so what was interesting in watching that play again with Michigan was the guy did a good job. The inbounder threw it all the way to the opposite side. All the heat is usually on the strong side of the ball. And you fake one way, you go the other. And then what happened was that guard did a good job. If you watch it, 2 guys ended up playing 1. The defensive player, and this happens all the time, this just goes back to, you know, people are human. The defensive player ended up getting frozen a little bit. The guy in Michigan had a wide open look. So his defender was in the lane, and then all of a sudden you give a guy 10 feet of space, he's got an open look. And sure enough, the guy in Michigan drilled it, but it was a heck of a play. They took away the primary option. They faked it a strong side. They threw it to half court on the weak side. That guy took it, got 2 guys to play 1, kicked it to the guy in the right wing who was open, and he hit it. And it was a great play drawn up by Michigan. And the guys at Houston are kicking themselves right now. And then Poole still had to hit the shot. But I'm a big believer you put a guy on that ball so that you don't give that guy vision. It's almost like it's almost like being in prevent defense with Tom Brady. You know, if you're going to leave him or Eli Manning out there floating around to read what you're doing, they're pretty good at that. And the idea of putting a guy on the ball is you want to make sure there's a little heat so that he just can't have an open look.
Well said, Coach. And watching Xavier, you know, listen, Florida State, comfortable. They didn't panic. They continued to make plays. Thought Chris Mack could have used a couple of his timeouts there, Coach. I mean, you got a number one team. Florida's storming back. I mean, the idea when you're up 10, 12, 14 points and that team is starting to make the run in the second half, how do you use those at timeouts? How do you use them to your advantage to try and maybe silence some of the momentum?
So it's interesting. We were watching it out here. My wife was jumping up and down and yelling, you know, call a timeout. And the whole thing, because it was Scruggs, is, you know, they have good guards at Xavier. It's your philosophy. If you have experienced guys that you trust with the ball, you're going to let those guys go and make decisions because you believe in them, and that's what you do. When you have young guys that you're like, all right, they're nervous and they're scared, then you call timeouts. And that was what my wife was saying. She's like, I don't care how old they are, how good they are, they look scared right now. And they, you know, and that's a feel. But the art of war, I always go back to this book called The Art of War that Bob Knight used to recommend. It was by a guy named General Sun Tzu. But he used to say this, and this was so true in sport, such is the force of momentum where the timid become brave and the brave become timid. And you think about these games of March Madness where you know, who was it? Since he's up 22 and Nevada comes back, all of a sudden when everything was great, you know, there's such a force momentum where the team has become brave and all of a sudden these guys are out there hitting shots. But then all of a sudden it turns. And now the brave become timid. And then all of a sudden you watch them turn the ball over. And once that momentum shifts, you can't pull it back. And it's amazing turn of events. And like you're saying, how do you do it? Well, you can try to do it with timeouts. But sometimes even those things don't work. And then it's do you shift up your defense, which they did. They went from the 1-3-1. They threw a little man. But at that point in time, Florida State, and especially as the underdog, again, here it comes back. There's more pressure on these teams that have higher seeds that there's nothing to lose for these guys, and there's a target on their back. And once that momentum shifts, it's no matter what you're running, it becomes a little bit more stagnant. You're running ball screens, guys aren't getting open. The wheels were coming off.
Coach Tim O'Toole, associate head coach at Cal. Coach, before we let you go, I know it's a wide-open tournament. I know it's anybody's tournament at this point. Some are going to say it's Nova. Some are going to say it's Duke. Some are going to think that Michigan is that team, that feel-good team with their Big Ten tournament run. Who is the team that you would pick right now as your favorite? If you had to pick one, Coach, Zaga, Duke, Nova, who are you going with?
I'm so biased, and it's not right. And this is hard, too, because you're going to play each other. Going into this thing, I had Duke, I had Purdue, I had Virginia, and I had Missouri. So Missouri's out, Virginia's out. I just think if when the Devils get going, they just have a lot of talent. They're pretty good. I know you asked me for one. That would be the one. I should probably end it right there.
The outstanding Coach O'Toole, outstanding perspective across the board on the 2-3 zone. I mean, nobody breaks down these games better than Coach. Coach, I know you'll have your house divided on Friday night. Jim Boeheim, no. Coach K, they're both your boys. Listen, Coach K, Hall of Famer, the greatest to ever do it in my lifetime, but I'll be pulling for the guy who lives up in the 315. You know that.
Well, you know what, JJ, a lot of people always ask me, because this isn't the first time these guys have faced off. I'm like, well, who do you root for? And it's like the same thing. No, you know, I'm going to be happy for one of them, and I'm going to be really sad for the other, because what you realize in this profession, those guys were family. They're fathers to me, father figures to me. And you love them, you root for them, and then when you hate to see them go against each other, because then you're like, somebody's going to be happy, and the other guy's going to be sad. And I just can't wait to see them, because they're still playing, and when you're not playing, you're so envious of them all.
Coach, enjoy it, brother. Good stuff. We'll chat soon, all right?
JJ, you're the best, buddy. Have a great show. Bye-bye.
Good stuff there from Coach O'Toole. Outstanding, outstanding stuff on how you're going to break down that 2-3 zone that has been, yet again, the talk of the NCAA tournament. Syracuse, second time in 3 years going on a magic carpet ride, playing in the second weekend of the Big Dance. Put a smile on my face.